up your frozen dinners, grab your TV tray, and settle in for another episode of the Plus Platoon, your podcast for all things Disney Plus, brought to you by Disney Plus fans. Watch along with us every week as we cover all the new, the old, the good, and the bad on Disney Plus. So put down that remote, don't touch that dial, and welcome your fabulous Plus Platoon host.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Plus Platoon. We're a Disney Plus fan podcast that gives honest, spoiler-filled reviews of movies and shows on Disney Plus. We'll look at new releases, coming attractions, and we'll even go back into the vault to revisit some of the classic Disney that's on the platform. Make sure you're subscribed and you will never miss a moment. I'm going to bring in Kate. Kate, good to see you, C.
Good to see you too, Derek. I missed you guys last week.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Wait. I forgot. Oh, no. I had this to say. As I always say, do it with a flair. Sorry.
Next, we got Pete. Pete, glad to have you with us. Help.
Hey, Derek, why is the title of this movie a plural when there's only one bed knob and only one broomstick?
Because on a bed, there are four bed knobs.
Good thought, though, Pete.
Steve, I'm surrounded by people with, like, way too much energy.
As I always say, do it with a flair.
Well, Kate was eating brownies, so...
Oh, what kind of brownies?
In Georgia, so it's not those kind of brownies. Because if you didn't already, please like, subscribe, share. We do have some fun shows coming up, and you never want to miss what we got planned. So,
Steve and I are from the good brownie states.
I can go next door and get all I want. Okay, guys, this week we went back into the vault, actually, on this one, to go to 1971, Bed Knobs and Broomsticks. This movie features Angela Lansbury as a witch in training, with who can make things move magically. And there is some kids that don't have much guidance from their parents, because in this case, they're war orphans. We have David Toms as someone who's kind of annoying and not really trustworthy. But it's not Mary Poppins. Think Mary Poppins with Nazis.
Oh, it's full of Sherman Brothers songs.
It is. Yes, it does have Sherman Brothers. So, yes, and ultimately it's set in 1940, and they end up fighting off the Nazis and sending them back into the ocean. So, before we truly dive into this movie, this was my first time seeing it. So I don't really have, actually the only memory I have of this at all is King Leonidas was the lion who played the calliope in the Dumbo floats in Main Street Electrical Parade with King Leonidas. So that's the only connection I have to this movie. Does anyone have positive memories about this movie? Anyone remember really enjoying parts of this movie when you've seen it before?
I loved it as a kid. I saw it in the movie theater, so I'm dating myself. But
not the original one, I'm guessing.
Whatever version was in the 70s or whatever, because my parents took us all to all the Disney movies, but I enjoyed it.
You saw it in 71?
Not that one. It would have been after that, because I was only 1 year old. Whatever the real release was, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I remember knowing I liked the soccer game section.
Okay.
So I enjoyed that as a kid. So,
Kate, do you have any memories of this movie as a kid?
I do. I remember, I remember like bits and pieces of it. So I'm wondering if I didn't actually see the whole movie and I just saw like bits and pieces that were on, like, in the Disney vault on the Disney Channel at night. But the part where they're under the sea and they sing the song about the briny sea or whatever it is, I knew the words to it. And I was like, why do I know these words? Like, what? So then I was trying to be like, wait, was this in a Disney parade that I didn't, like, that I didn't realize?
Not that
song. I also remembered. Right. And so... But then as I was watching the part when she like goes to smell the like little water flower or whatever, and it turns into a seahorse. And I remember as a kid, I would take my, oh, I don't have anything really, like I would take like a blanket or something, I'll go like this and go, and it would, like I would pretend like it was a little seahorse. And I had zero memory of that until watching this. So, and I remember my, I think my grandmother had a poster bed with the knobbies on it. And I thought it was so cool that this bed was magical and like it would fly and you had, but that's what I remember. Pete?
Surprisingly, I do not remember this movie at all from childhood. I did watch it maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I think when it was on, when TCM was doing the Disney nights, I think they had it on there and I watched it. But no childhood memory at all, other than, you know, a shot of them all riding on the bed, which was probably from Wonderful World of Disney. But like nothing in this movie reminded me of like triggered any memories from childhood. So,
OK, well, as Kate mentioned, there are very much parts of this that were considered magical. So what for this movie for you was magical? What about this really, really made things, made you enjoy parts of this movie? And Pete, I'll start with you.
I liked the more magical stuff, like the stuff when she was trying to do magic and maybe not really doing it right, but like, you know, so when she turned the boy into the rabbit and when she was trying to fly the broom at first and, you know, things like that I thought were amusing. And I did enjoy, is it Nabubu? What's the name of
the place?
The animated section was pretty good. I'm going to keep comparing this to Mary Poppins because clearly going for a, we want this to be a live action animated classic like Mary Poppins. And I mean, when you think of like Jolly Holiday and Supercalifragilistic, that sequence, and then you compare it to this sequence.
Which one came first?
Mary Poppins by 8 years.
By 8 years?
Yes. Mary Poppins was 63.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But this was being developed at the same time as.
Even first.
Okay.
Right. So it doesn't compare to Mary Poppins positively, but I did enjoy that sequence. And I kind of, even though it went on too long, I enjoyed the final sequence where all the armor comes to life and fights the Nazis. I thought there were some amusing bits there. It needed to be about half the length that it actually was, because it really just went on and on and on. But there were parts of it that I did enjoy. Steve, what about you?
I enjoyed Angel Lansbury. And also David Tomlinson, I think that's what you say his name. I enjoyed both their acting, especially David Tomlinson's, because it's so different than Mary Poppins, like a different light. I liked how they played off of each other. And like you, I enjoyed like the sort of the magical aspects, sort of that very, to me, it's a very classic Disney movie. It fits in with what I watched growing up. So. And I think Kate was saying the younger, is it Paul?
The youngest boy.
Yes. He was my favorite. So.
Yeah.
You know, the oldest boy weirdly reminded me of young George Bailey from, from It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead, Derek. Sorry.
I really enjoyed the visuals on this just because. For 1971, not even so much the animation, the live action animated sections, but like the effects of them turning, realistically the transition effects and the effects of when they're on the bed and such. I mean, this won Academy Award for Best Visual Effects in 1971.
It's so very believable for sure. Yeah.
Okay, relatively believable anyway.
No. I mean, it's believable that it won because it was, I think, for that time. I thought the, again, the everything coming to life at the end, I thought they did a good job of making it look like it was walking, like it was occupied by a person when it clearly wasn't.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. The anime, the substitutionary locomotion things were amazing because I saw it's not like they used green screen on that. And
no.
It's those were actually it was all marionettes and
right. Such.
So,
yeah, it wasn't someone in a green screen wearing a I mean, they didn't have well, they probably had that technology then, but didn't use it as commonly. So,
right.
Yeah.
Now, some of the transitions to them on the bed makes sense when you realize this is the same year that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory came out. So, Kate, what else? I mean, what else worked for you?
I mean, you all said most of what I was going to say. One part that I just giggled at was the part with the shoes where she was trying to get the shoe. That's when they do the
dancing. Hocus
pocus, spiddly hocus, whatever it was. When the shoes would move and then she would move and then the shoes would move for some reason, that just captivated me. I enjoyed this movie. I went into it thinking, oh God, this is going to be an awful slog. It wasn't as bad of a slog. It wasn't great, but it wasn't.
We've watched slog-ier movies lately.
We've watched worse.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got the plot. And my next question is, did the plot work for you guys? And I mentioned this, I watched at least the first part of this with my wife. And one of the big issues I had actually that kind of took me out of the correct time frame was if this is set in 1940 and the Home Guard is set as guys who fought in World War II. That was World War One. That was only 22 years before this. How are they so old?
Because that's funnier.
Well, I know, but I'm just thinking, David Tomlinson never would have been accepted to go fight in World War II.
Yeah.
But
because of his age?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much. And he was well,
I think the implication was that he signed up for that Home Guard. I don't think he was going off to fight because at the end the Home Guard shows up and then he joins them, right?
So yeah, I couldn't tell
it,
when
it didn't explicitly say that, but I think that's the implication is he's joining that the
Home that Guard. That project he's found purpose in his life that is honest and meaningful. That's how I took it.
Okay. And then the other part that bothered me about this was if she's truly a witch and she's still got the frickin' book, why does her workshop blowing up make her not a witch anymore?
Well, remember, she gave away the book.
Well, yes, but...
But she knows that she knows the spells.
She knows at least some of the spells, but all of a sudden they made it seem like the workshop blowing up made it... Yeah. And so she's not a witch anymore. So that just didn't work. And never mind the mail order Hogwarts she's enrolled in. So I got Kate on that one. Kate, did the plot work for you?
Mail order Hogwarts. That's classic.
It did. For what it is, it's directed towards, you know, probably like 9 and 10 year olds who don't understand everything that's going on. For me, it's sort of that nostalgia thing of it's bringing back good memories. Like, hey, it was enjoyable. There's like parts, like the dance sequence. I looked at my other half and I went, that entire sequence could have been cut. It was like the big dance sequence in a musical when the main cast has to be doing a costume change.
Yeah.
It just went on and on and on and on and had like no purpose. The story. So I understand why there's so many different versions of this movie.
And Pete kind of brought that up with us. You said you watched a documentary where they talked about a version that's even like 25 minutes longer.
Yes. So, so there was on Disney Plus under the extras, it was supposed to be a documentary about the Sherman Brothers, but it was mostly a documentary about that. The movie had been like almost 2.5 hours, and they because at that time, 1971, a movie that long would be considered a roadshow picture, and where how they wanted to release it, they couldn't release it, so they cut it to 2 hours.
Okay, and a roadshow picture was one that had like special engagements, and it had intermissions, and it had no. I'm serious. I didn't, or for whoever else is out there, because. Yeah. So,
right. So the longer movies would roll out as roadshows and would go from town to town and kind of have special productions because you'd be in the movie, like Lawrence of Arabia they did that with. So anyways, they cut it. And then this was kind of about, well, there were like 4 songs that were cut, and it was about restoring things. And one of the songs they couldn't put back in because they only had still pictures and all these things. But like watching that documentary, I was like, all I could think of was, thank God they didn't do that. That isn't the version they showed us. Cause like that dance scene on the whatever the road, hey, I forget the name of the road,
Portobello. Which is
Portobello Road? No. Anyways, they talked about like, oh, we restored some of the dance sequences that were cut out. And I was like, no, you don't need to do that. that was already too long. You don't need to put more of that in, you know? So, my memory of this movie from the last time I saw it was, it felt very long, and definitely did not need to be 25 minutes longer. So, yeah. But did the plot work? I don't know. Did I skip Kate? Did we skip Kate?
We did, but we kind of went back.
No, but you all, it was fine. The plot was fine. For some reason, it was the first like 1/3 of the movie, pretty much until they found the magician guy, Mr. Banks. I'm just going to call him Mr. Banks because I can't remember his name. Until they found him, I really liked all up into that part. That part, it had me really invested. Angela Lansbury, her comedy was fabulous with the broom. The kids were hilarious. It, like, she had to win the boy over. It worked. For some reason, as soon as Mr. Banks joined in, that was when more of the musical numbers came in that just drug on too long. And that's coming from somebody who loves musical numbers. It drug on too long. I started missing plot points. Like I was missing catching things. I don't know. The first 1/3 of the movie was great. After that, so.
Well, and I think part of the problem was it went into what are now like action movie tropes in that like, oh, we got to find the thing, but in order to find the thing, we have to find the other thing, but we can't find the other thing until we do this. So
when it turns out it was all in the kids' book to be anyway.
Well, right. They had it all along. Well, that's a trope too, right? But, but like none of that was particularly like it felt like just a way to draw it out and have additional scenes. And I agree with what Kate just said, that the fat was in the middle, and it may have worked better if the songs were better.
Well, which definitely brings us into our next point is, are these the overall weakest Sherman Brothers songs in a movie that they've done? That we have either covered or that people think of as truly a Sherman Brothers musical, because they did a couple movies that are stinkers. But as far as like the big movies, Kate, you were nodding your head.
Yes, this is the weakest, in my opinion. None of, except for some reason, I remember the Briny Sea song. Don't know why, but I remember, and like, don't ask me to even tell you how it goes right now because I won't be able to, but listening to it in the movie, I was able to sing along with it, which is wild. But the Portobello Street one just annoyed me. It just annoyed me for some reason. And again, this is coming from a music person. None of these songs Well, there was one I actually did like the song when to be an unbeliever or whatever it was, which is making believing. The bed. Yeah.
Which was nominated for an Oscar.
That was the Oscar song.
Yeah. That song, I was like, oh, this is good. But other than that, and the Briny Sea song stuck in my head. But other than that, there wasn't a Feed the Birds. There wasn't a Step in Time. There wasn't, it just didn't have that to me. But Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, there's other movies that they did songs for that aren't that memorable. So I'm not sure this is the worst, but I agree with you that there's nothing really memorable. I think that Age of Not Believing song was the only one that had a little bit of cultural impact. The kind of,
yeah,
you know, you would hear in Disney compilations and things like that.
That's the one that was on the Disney compilation CDs.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this movie, it was very disappointing, because when you think Sherman Brothers, you're like, oh man, everything's so catchy. You know, even if you don't know the song, you're listening to dun 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 dun. And there was none of that. I don't know what they, again, watching that special, there was a couple songs that were like Mary Poppins rejects.
literally Beautiful Briny was a Mary Poppins reject.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, ah, well, maybe that explains it, in that like these weren't good enough for Mary Poppins, but they're good enough for this because Walt's dead and you won't say anything.
Walt's dead. Oh God.
Hey.
Well, it's true. I mean, this was a post Walt, you know, I mean, it might have started before he passed away, but I mean, 1971, he passed away in 66.
And in the story meeting, he fell asleep.
Oh, right. They showed that.
Yeah. And especially in the story meeting of developing this movie, he fell asleep as they were presenting it.
Yeah. I really feel like if these songs were better, this movie could have worked.
Yes.
I think Mary Poppins is long, and there's a lot of scenes that go on. The Step in Time scene
is too long.
Is goes on, but it works because the song is so catchy. Good. You know, that you, yeah, that you're kind of like, okay, you know, so you're enjoying it even as it goes on. This movie, you know, we talked about that, the Portobello Road song. Like, the song wasn't really very good, so you're just like, oh, please let this end.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah,
I agree with everything that's been said. Like, yeah, I don't remember this movie for the songs. I remember it for the animation sequence.
Yep.
And then like the magic part, I think that's what fascinated me. Way I remember more Mary Poppins for the songs.
Yeah, I think if you do a direct comparison against Mary Poppins, you're going to lose every time. I mean, there's a reason that Julie Andrews turned the part down. It's because she didn't want to get typecast into those kind of roles, those magic witch roles. Yeah, she turned down.
Interesting.
Is it Evangeline or something like that? Emmentide, Evinrude, something? I don't...
You're right, the first one.
I love Evinrude.
Oh, Evinrude's hilarious. Yeah, you know who Evinrude is, right?
Nope. Yeah.
Oh. Okay, Evinrude is the dragonfly in The Rescuers.
It's your favorite sequel.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
The first movie, though.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, the horribly sad one. Yes.
I don't think this is the weakest, necessarily. This is not the weakest movie by far that they did, that they were associated with, that the Sherman Brothers were associated with. I think, for some reason, the one that came to mind for me is, yes, it's got probably one of the all-time earworms ever. And it's not a Disney movie, but everybody thinks it is. Just
I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say, too. But other than the one song, I think the songs are fairly weak. Is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
What song is in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, you chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you.
I love seeing the movie. All three of you sing this at different tempos in different keys. This is really, really, really fun to watch.
My poor fendered friend. Anyway,
that was I. Need you all wasn't, when this post to go watch.
wasn't Toot Sweet one of the songs in that movie?
Yes, it was. Yes.
I liked that song too.
Toot Sweet was in there. The Hushabye Mountain was in it. The Old Bamboo. I mean, but it's just.
Oh, the Old Bamboo. That's the Old Bamboo. Okay.
Toot Chitty Bang Bang?
Yes.
Things I didn't realize.
There's a reason it feels like a Disney movie is because it's got a Sherman Brothers. It's got Dick Van Dyke. It's got, I can't remember who directed it, but he was why do I think it was Bill Conti or something like that? It was,
I got it up here. So, oh, right. I forgot it was, Ken Hughes directed it, but it was produced by, Albert Broccoli, who was the James Bond guy. It was also written by,
Ian Fleming. James
Bond guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know that this is necessarily completely the overall weakest movie, but it is a very, very weak movie, especially because it's what my son would call a try hard. It tries to be Mary Poppins,
right? Yeah.
But it's not.
Well, which makes sense. They had so much success from Mary Poppins.
Well, right. Let's face it. Everything that came afterwards is because of Mary Poppins.
Right.
Yeah, because this was supposed to be made first, but then they got the rights to Mary Poppins. Yeah, with Mary Poppins.
Yeah. So, guys, other thoughts about Bedknobs and Broomsticks? Anything to wrap it up?
It was fine.
Yeah. And
there were worse ways to spend 2 hours.
Very much. And again, we have spent worse 2 hours lately.
Oh, there's been many things that we've seen that I'd rather watch this again.
No, but it's to me almost the most interesting thing is you see so little of young Angela Lansbury. There was a couple of movies she did when she was even younger. There was like a Hitchcock movie and things, but like seeing her in this part where she can kind of be a little bit wacky and everything. I mean, we say young Angela Lansbury, I think she was like 40 here, so she wasn't that young, but compared to when most of us think of her, like Murder, She Wrote and Mrs. Potts and those type of things. So, I really get a kick out of that alone, seeing like that kind of younger version of Angela Lansbury. So that's my other thought.
Or, like her in Manchurian Candidate is a great part for her. So, okay. As we always do, we'd give things cups of pixie dust out of 5. 5 being the perfect movie. Kate, cups of pixie dust for Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
I'm going to give it a 2. I probably won't watch it again. And I feel like I liked Sword in the Stone a little bit more than this. And I didn't particularly like Sword in the Stone. So it's between a 2 and a 2.5, but I'm going to go with 2, but that might change. Go ahead, Pete.
I liked this better than Sword in the Stone. I'm going to give this a 2.5. I enjoyed it, but it isn't I'm going to go back to it very often, if at all. So 2.5.
And I'm going to go up a little bit more and go with 3. Actually, I enjoyed it mainly because childhood memories. I know, necessarily, I'm not going to go. I don't rewatch things typically, but I liked it. 3.
Okay. And I'm going to go if I say it's a solid 2 for me, it's again, I'm kind of in that Kate room between 2 and 2.5. If there are scenes that are on and I've got nothing better to do, I might watch the substitutionary locomotion scene. Or the fight at the end. Mm. There are other parts that, click, 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 keep going, keep going, keep going. So it's a solid 2 for me. So it's a good 2, but I can't go 2.5. So
that's fair.
Okay. Kate, what have we got for Disney Plus news this week?
Just a little bit, my friend. First, Thunderbolts will be coming to Disney Plus on August 27th. I'm excited for this. I'm excited to watch this.
Okay. And because Pete, you said it's not too bad, right?
I think of the three Marvel movies this year, this was the one I enjoyed the most. And I didn't enjoy Captain America, but of the other two, I think I enjoyed this more than Fantastic Four.
We will be watching this one.
Because it was funny. And to me, I need humor in my Marvel movie. And Fantastic Four didn't have enough of it. So
that's fair. And last but not least, Top Gun, The Next Generation will be streaming on Disney Plus September 16th. It follows actual naval aviators who hope to become fighter pilots. And that's it for the Disney Plus.
Like it actually is going to their fighter school, not Top Gun, but to the are you good enough to become a naval aviator flyer of fighter jets?
Excellent.
So yeah, that's one I'm actually kind of interested in, may actually pull up and watch part of, just because of, I think it could be really, really bad and cheesy, or it could be pretty decent. So who knows? Okay, Kate, we are throwing you a bone on next week's one. We are going to watch the documentary, Not Just a Goof, about the making of a Goofy movie, which you were, you know, the keeper of the faith on. So
it will always be.
And this is one where I'm actually interested, because I've seen little clips of, like, they've done little snippets of this and they've showed those out. I love watching voice actors work.
Mm-hmm. And
so I think that's the part I'm looking forward to most, is the different voice actors doing the different voices and kind of showing us how they played with things. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most for this.
You know, I love a good documentary.
Yeah. And you hate a bad documentary.
I do.
But guys, after the next few weeks, there's not much, like there's hardly anything coming out in September at all. I mean, Elio will probably come out end of September-ish, I'm guessing, just because it's coming out to the pay services, I think, this week.
Yeah, it's got to come out in September, I would think.
So, but if you have suggestions on what you want us to watch, please email us at plusplatoon@gmail.com, and please don't give us really bad suggestions just so we all hate it. What's your guys' favorite movies? Let us know what you want us to watch.
Would you like to know what my favorite movie is?
No, we don't.
It's not on the service.
It's not on the service either.
Uh-uh. I can tell you, I can recite it word for word.
Okay. Kate's got to leave us for the night. But gentlemen, guys, if you have suggestions for us, please send us to those at YouTube, Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, wherever we are. We've got new shows that come out every Thursday on YouTube and all the major podcasting services. For Steve and Pete, I guess Kate can come back for the goodbyes and ground. We will see everyone next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Plus Platoon. Be sure to subscribe to the Plus Platoon podcast to keep getting great content each week. Then head over to Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews, as they help make the Plus Platoon visible to even more Disney Plus fans. Also, go to YouTube and like and subscribe to the Plus Platoon channel, where you can watch all future episodes live. If you have a question for the Plus Platoon, please send us an email to plusplatoon@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Plus Platoon.
The Plus Platoon is a Disney Plus fan podcast and is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or the Disney Plus streaming service. All opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the individual hosts and in no way reflect the views of the Walt Disney Company.
Thanks for watching, and be sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because the Plus Platoon is to be continued.